Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to another exciting and informative edition of Cause and Effect Radio here on Atlanta Business Radio, coming to you from the Business Radio X network. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here. And today we also have from UHY Advisors, Mr. David Barton. How you doing, man?
Doing great. Doing great.
So, David, any funny UHY stories since the last time we chatted?
Any funny UHY stories?
They're all
hilarious. I'll have to think about that.
You were just in New York. You must have a story from there.
There's always stories from New York, but what happens in New York stays in New York.
What a fantastic slogan. So we're delighted to have you. Looking forward to your insight and wisdom. But let's get the headliner introduced here early, and let's make sure that our listeners know who we have with us. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast Vice President Information Technology with IST Management Services, Mr. Dan Blackinger. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yes, sir.
Now, Dan, can you share a little bit about IST? What are you guys doing for folks?
Sure. Well, we started out as a facilities management company about 17, 18 years ago. And then we've started getting into document management and e-discovery and corporate education, legal, healthcare, and finance vertical markets.
Now, how did that evolution occur? Did it start with a client? You were starting doing the facilities management, and they just started asking you to do more stuff?
Yeah. Our CEO, Hal Blackman's very entrepreneurial in his viewpoints. And so he started the company from the ground up with only a few employees, and then it's just grown over the years.
And has it been based because the customer is kind of driving it? They're asking you to do more?
Yeah. As we've been exposed to different areas of the business, we've had customers come in and say, hey, could you guys take care of this? Because we do have an aspect of excellence that we try to provide.
And you're the IT guy.
I'm the IT guy.
So yeah. You're like, the answer is always yes?
Well, no, definitely not always yes. But I'm kind of the guy who's the, Hal calls me a steady Eddie. I'm the guy that's like very consistent. Things have to always be done the right way.
Of course, I already know this, but for Lee's benefit, e-discovery, what is that?
Electronic discovery is a process that law firms use to be able to take in documents, provide them to the lawyers to be able to review, and then put together case files electronically.
I bet that saves a lot of time, energy, and effort, and it provides some kind of search capability.
Right. It does everything from OCR, and then they can go in and look at keywords and be able to find the smoking gun, if you will, of what the case is about.
So, David, can you share a little bit about your relationship?
Sure. We started working with IST, about 3 years ago.
Yeah, that's three years ago. Yes, sir.
And they approached me because I had done a public speaking engagement here in Atlanta and was talking about the changeover in the standards between the old SAS 70 reports and the new SOC reports. And they had a need because some of their clients are very, very large companies, and IST is a pretty small company in comparison. And those very large companies have some very specific criteria that they want to know that the information they're sharing is going to be secure and confidential and so on. And so the SOC report is the best way to do that. So we helped them get that first SOC report under their belt, and now we're doing a little bit more with some security and confidentiality kinds of things. So
how does the whole sales and marketing process, system, machine, magic mojo for you guys work? Because I get the idea that this is probably a fairly intensive, educational, consultative kind of sales and marketing process. Is that accurate for you guys?
Well, not really. Not for facilities management or e-discovery. It's more that they have a service that they need provided. And so they will go out and look for somebody who can provide that service cost effectively, as well as with, like I was saying before, a level of excellence where we're doing it extremely well.
Now, what are some of the concerns that your clients are facing right now?
Well, with every area of business, I'd say you have security, ease of doing business, and your ability to deliver and get the job done. That's what they really care about.
All right, but you can't just create a cool graphic that says we are excellent. I mean, right? So you've got to do something to demonstrate.
How do you demonstrate it?
Yeah, well, it's obviously through, first of all, day one, the marketing materials and how we put those together. And so we have very professional slicks. And so we go in and so you have to have your subject matter experts over your area of business to be able to convince the customer in the beginning when you go through the RFI, RFP process and then actually have a face-to-face presentation with a customer. And then after that, it's based on performance. It's do you walk to your talk?
Now, how difficult is it to get the information you need to know if you can really help them or not? Like, do they open up? Like, because it seems like you're dealing with information that's pretty private and confidential. And in order to understand the scope of the work, how do you kind of get that?
Well, for the most part, the information that our customers provide, like with facilities management, it's very straightforward. We're providing a service, doing mailroom copy, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Our bent on it is we make it really high tech. We have voice recognition and things of that nature. And that's how we started off as a business. When you get into e-discovery, it's, hey, we won't look at your stuff. Okay. No, we do have
some. We promise.
Yeah, we promise. So the aspects of confidentiality, non-disclosure, they're obviously put into contracts, SLAs, things of that nature.
And you have a very trustworthy face and voice. And
oh, thanks. Sure. Appreciate
that. Probably helps.
That's probably helped you from, you know, from your dating days all the way up to now.
I don't know. I have to talk to my wife about that.
Well, you know, let's go there, though. We don't have to go specifically to dating days, but I would be interested a little bit in the backstory. How did you get to where you are? Can you describe a little bit about your career path?
Yeah, that's a long story. Well, I'll try to keep it relatively short. I grew up on a cattle farm in northern part of New York State. And so that's where I grew up. So, you know, 25 feet of snow, having to shovel.
Wow.
You know, I tell people I can bale hay and shovel manure with the best of them.
So they had really good computer system there?
And no, actually, but it was, I got to get out of here. I went to RIT up in Rochester, a really, really great school, technical school. I specialized in robotics. And that was the beginning of being very technically oriented. When we first came out with, you know, programming and computers, I was all over it. I just loved that stuff. And that was the beginning. And I went to Long Island. That's where I worked for a printed circuit board company, met my wife. We got pregnant. I say we, because you know, she almost broke my hand giving birth to Derek. And then we ended up getting transferred to Noonan, Georgia. They had a plant down here and then went worked for SA. That brought us to the north side and worked for Test Entry Systems and did a lot of international travel for about 6 years. And then
you can't hold a job, can you?
No, I can't. It's funny though, you look at my resume and I've got like three companies on there, and it's like that's a 30 plus career. So I'm actually a pretty stable guy.
So is there a sweet spot? Or is it a certain type of company that you typically work with in terms of size or industry sector or?
No, it runs the gamut of all different verticals that we get involved with. It's more providing the service and our focus is on being able to provide it accurately, but also very quickly. And we've been fortunate that we have kind of leapfrogged other companies who have hardware. And, you know, every 6 months, right, it changes.
Right.
So you got people who've been in it for years and years, and we're putting in the brand new, fastest stuff. And so we can actually perform much more quickly.
Now, you mentioned security was important for your customers. Can you walk us through when you have an engagement that includes security, how does that start and then some of the services you deploy?
Sure. So the beginning part is they send out an RFI and you have a variety of people.
Forgive me for interrupting. RFI.
Request for information.
Come on. You couldn't decode that?
Well, I have a lot of those. I have a lot of RFIs, and I may have some later. I have one right now. I have an RFI about what an RFI is.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sorry. I saw business radio on the thing, so I figured that, you know, I could just use business terms. but when they do that, you have it runs the gamut. You have customers who don't know anything about security. And so in some cases, you're kind of consulting and educating them to help them make a good decision on who to pick as a provider. And then you have others that they're like off the charts. Oh, my goodness. It's like, I don't think anybody, I mean, you know, it goes beyond FedRAMP, which is the most stringent government regulations. And you're like, yeah, we can't comply with this. And then they go, well, you really don't have to do these things, but... You know, just it's off the charts.
350 questionnaires about security and confidentiality, and how do you do the backups, and how many people have access? Yeah.
But is this an area where a UHY can help your organization?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. UHY has been paramount in providing us the understanding of what the expectations are within different areas. So. One of the things I did is I put a roadmap together that says, this is where I want, from an IT perspective, our company to go. And so we have that roadmap. And when we're able to, we beef that up and fill it out and check boxes and go through and fulfill certain aspects of it. Like an example might be intrusion detection. And so you say, hey, we need to do this.
Right.
And so you go and you research what you can purchase, and then based on what your budget is, you go out and find a solution for that.
And then do you do the training of their staff, the customer staff, or is this something that you guys handle every aspect of it?
Right, because we're providing services, it's internal for the most part. Mm-hmm. We just have to comply with what their service level agreement requirements are.
Okay, David, I don't get your role in all this. Are you truly adding value or just a nice smile?
No, the value that we're adding is, as Dan said, helping them kind of navigate the waters. And there's a ton of different security frameworks out there and a lot of different reports that a business can get to prove to their customers and to the rest of the world that they're doing what they say they do. You know, because a lot of companies can say, yes, we have great security and great confidentiality. Well, prove it. So that's where the third-party attestation comes in. And, you know, as I've said, there's ISO 27001, there's NIST, there's the FISMA, FedRAMP, PCI, all these acronyms that all have to do with various security frameworks. And so when IST first approached us, it's like, we need to be able to show these very large customers that are asking for, you know, our complete history of security and confidentiality, but we need to be reasonable in terms of answering these massive questionnaires, and Dan doesn't have enough time to fill them all out. So what we suggested was the Service Organization Control Report, which the AICPA years ago recognized that companies want to understand what the controls are around certain aspects of service organizations, and they created this report, and basically one auditor goes in and does an audit or an attestation of what all those various controls are and whether or not the company is actually effectively managing those controls. So that's what we do for them. They have the report. They can distribute it to their current customers, and usually they get a non-disclosure agreement to disclose it to prospective customers. That way the customer can read that we, as an independent audit firm, have actually tested all the controls that they say they have in place and can prove it.
Somebody in this whole chain has an extreme degree of patience and persistence.
That would be me.
It's got to be you. I mean, for me personally, I don't like to fill out, you know, the form at the doctor's office when you're just going in for it. That drives me nuts.
Yep.
So, I mean, so I could see why someone might write a check and engage someone that knows what they're doing around this stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's the thing is, David put it aptly, is to navigate the waters because you don't know what you don't know. And so
but do the customers know?
Yeah. Well, that's a loaded question.
You want, right? You want to take that one or you want me to take that one?
They know to send the big questionnaire.
Yeah.
Right. They know
and,
that much.
And it's one of those things that you have some customers that they know that if, like, if I process credit cards, I've got to use PCI. And so what does that entail? And so they understand that there's some kind of a framework that they've got to adhere to if they want to do business in that vertical. But as far as, like, knowing the differences between one framework and another, no, it's very, very complicated.
And it's changing, right?
Oh, it
always.
That's what makes it nuts. It's every year,
never
every
year. Twice,
it's
right?
Like it's like paying taxes. You know, it's what's the tax code. You know, I don't have time to read the 4,000 books that to get up on it. So yeah, and that's another thing, another value that UHY comes in with is that's what they do for their business. So they go out and research that, and they know, and they go, hey, this year, this is the thing we've got to focus on. And, you know, we want to give you a heads up that these controls are something we're going to be looking into. It's a new requirement.
So do you have to get good at, or maybe this is a non-issue in your sector, do you have to get good at, though, discerning whether the stuff that they're sending you and asking for is just pushing you off because they're really not there in the sales cycle yet and they don't want to deal with you, or if they really are serious qualified prospects who need and want the help from someone?
Right. Well, I'd say that's, again, UHY. We look to that.
They help.
Yeah. They say, yeah, this is something for your business. This is something that's important for you to be able to prove. This other area, this control doesn't apply to your business because of you're not doing these things.
So let's don't jump through all of these. The reason the question occurred to me is I was thinking, David, maybe you could make me one that customized one for me that I could send all these people that are calling me trying to sell me copiers. I swear we get like 3 calls a day. But that's what made me think of it, you know, just
yeah.
So you do. So that's another way that they can really help.
Right. Well, yeah.
Let me ask you a question, Dan, from the standpoint of the sales cycle. For services that you're providing,
mm-hmm.
Are you dealing mostly with other the end customer or and these really large organizations? What I see a lot of times for my clients is purchasing gets involved, and purchasing has this checklist that says, in order for us to even look at your RFP, you first have to have this credential, this credential, this credential, this credential. Is that accurate?
Yeah, there's sometimes that if you don't have those things in place, you're not even invited to the party.
Right. So your question about do the customers really know? In many cases, not really.
They just have
really.
A checklist.
They have a checklist that their auditors have helped them prepare.
Right.
Or
someone told them
business
this
owners.
Is important. If they don't have yes. these 3 things, don't even bother.
Yes. And so you get some customers that say, well, you have to have ISO 27001 before we can do business with you, which is, you know, for all intents and purposes, very, very similar to what they would see with a SOC 2 report or
right.
in some cases a PCI.
So they
it's
can't
all a security
discern,
framework.
But they can't discern.
No, because they're a purchasing person. They can't possibly know what all
well,
of those
things are. Well, someone yelled at them before.
Exactly.
Because they didn't
exactly.
it, right?
And so now it's on the checklist.
Right.
And before they look at your RFP, if you're not what they call SOC certified, then
you're
they're
out.
Not even going to, mm-hmm, yep, exactly.
So now how do you get around that? Or is that just part of the deal? You just keep moving and just go
well,
on to the next.
In some cases, you know, what we try to do is educate our clients and say, when someone asks you for an ISO and you say, we don't have an ISO, but let me tell you, we do have a SOC report and it's going to show you the same kinds of things that you'd see in ISO when you're concerned about security.
Right.
So,
but you have to have the swagger to say, look, ISO is so yesterday.
Exactly.
Yeah, I understand why you would ask for that, but we're in a different league here. Let me just send you, right? You might not say those words, but you got to have that level of confidence in responding back to them, right? And maybe provide some education to them.
Right. Well, David will give us counsel that says, when you're asked this type of question, like about an ISO, tell mm-hmm. them you're using NIST. And for your type of business, NIST is actually a better metric for you to use to evaluate your business than this other
mm-hmm.
Now do you have standard. A story maybe you can share that you were able to educate somebody? I mean, you don't have to name the name of the company, but maybe you were down a path and then they didn't know and you were able to educate them and kind of open their eyes to maybe your services.
I can't really recall anybody right this
I time. Can give you one.
Yeah.
Okay.
You don't have to it's name not, the company. Just no, tell no, us what it not, rhymes with.
Not it's not IST, but I had a client out of New York that called me and said, we've got one of our customers that is asking us to get a SOC report. Now, this is a company that develops software, okay? So think Microsoft. Mm-hmm. Think Excel, okay? And this particular customer of theirs said, we want to see your SOC report. And my first question was, why? Because they're not, all they're doing is buying the software and putting right. it on their own facility. So I said, let's put together a conference call and I'll talk to whoever it is that's asking you this ridiculous question. And
but to them, it's not ridiculous. It's on their list. They're going to get in trouble if they allow this to go
again,
right?
Right. It's misunderstanding. It's somebody said you have to have this,
right.
and I'm going to explain why they don't have to.
Right.
So we got on the conference call, and it turns out it was a state, one of the states, one of the 50, that had a women and dependent children kind of a system that they were running, and this particular client of mine was the one providing the software for that system. Mm-hmm. Turns out that initially, the whole thing was part of the my client's services. They developed it, they built it, they rented or leased them the equipment to run it on. But over time, it got to the point where the state took over all of it. You know, at the lease, end of the lease, they purchased the hardware, mm-hmm. they took over all the administration, all the management, et cetera. And I said, okay, let's start this off with, what is it that my client does for you? Well, they provide the software. I said, okay. Does Microsoft provide software to you? They said, yes. I said, are you asking Microsoft for a SOC report? Well, no. Why not? So
now they called Microsoft. Now you got them in trouble.
now Bill's pissed.
That was pretty much the end of the conversation. You know, they wanted to know about how the software was developed and tested and so on and so forth. I said, that's fine, you know. You're welcome to send an auditor to look at
right,
how
but
they do that.
Do that with every other software provider
but,
that
correct.
You're using.
But, you know, don't single us out just because we're providing you with very specific software.
So do you find that occasionally a bureaucracy, sometimes they get off on a weird tangent and then no one even knows how this even began?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's, you know, I can talk for days about how SOC reports developed and the difference between a SOC 1 and a SOC 2, which Dan is now almost as good as me, and how it's misused. And, I mean, another funny story, if you want to hear it. We've got another client here in Atlanta who called us and said, we have to have a SOC 1 report. And they've already had an ISO report, okay? They had that in hand, and one of their Fortune 100 customers, auditors said, no, we can't accept an ISO report for the purposes of doing the financial statement for the Fortune 100 company, mm-hmm. okay? Had to have the SOC 1. And I said, that doesn't make any sense because you're not doing what that report was intended for.
Right.
And no matter. So ended up, the partner at this big four audit firm said, no, we have to have a SOC 1, even though it doesn't really apply. And
these things aren't free, right? Like you
no,
can't just like kind of
no, no,
knock
no,
one of these out in the afternoon.
Correct. They're expensive to perform and to produce. So end of the day, we did the SOC 1. And just a few weeks ago, she called me again and she said, we might need to get a SOC 2 as well. I said, okay, why is that? Well, we have another client in another part of the country that has said they want the SOC 2. And, you know, in this business, the customer's always right. You know, if you want to do business with some right. of these companies, you jump through the hoops that they put in front of you.
Okay, but let's be honest. If that call would have come to Dan, you'd have walked, right? I mean, enough already. Let's go find somebody who wants us to help them.
Well,
right? So that's why it's good to have David in the meeting.
We got educated, and he said, yeah, you don't want a SOC 1. You want a SOC 2, and that's what we did. It was very easy.
So when's the SOC 3 yeah. kind of present itself?
Those yeah. usually don't present themselves at all.
No,
there is a SOC 3.
I bet there is.
Yeah, there is. So anyway, at the end of the day, this turned out to be the same Big Four audit firm. Two different regions, two different offices, two different partners. One said, we got to have a SOC 2. The other one said, we got to have a SOC 1. both talking about the same service provider. That's how crazy it is. And these are, you know, CPAs that have been in the business for a very, right. very long time. So that's why my niche is so very narrow.
So you got these RFIs, you got the SOC reports, you got all this. What was that word you used earlier? So I'm going to add it to my lexicon. Attestation?
Attestation.
Meaning you attest to something?
Correct.
Or somebody with some credibility attests to something?
Exactly. It's not an audit, okay?
It's not an audit.
No.
It's like it's a little short of an audit, or it's just a different animal?
It's a different type of opinion that we render as an independent third party, okay?
All right.
An attestation is normally based on an assertion. Okay. Now, Dan and his company.
I have a lot of those.
Dan's got a lot of assertions.
Dan has a lot.
You have.
Correct. So, IST makes an assertion that says, we have controls in place. Here's what they look like. And those controls have been operating effectively for a given time period. And we, as an independent CPA firm, attest to the fact that that assertion is accurate and correct.
All right. Surveys? Is there any place for surveys in this mix going one way or the other? Do customers use surveys to get information from you guys? Do you survey them?
Well, a lot of times the verbiage will read that we have the right to come in and audit you to verify that what you're saying is true.
Okay.
Most of the times when we give them the SOC 2, they say, okay, that's good enough.
Okay.
But that's at the heart of your business, though, is doing the job at excellent.
Right. Yes.
So that's, right. I mean, yeah. So all of this kind of checks and balances is part of the deal.
Right. And I'm sure that there are those that look at our reputation in the market, and it's all word of mouth, right?
Right.
Especially within legal. It's like, if you mess up, you're done. So you have to be very careful to do a good job every time.
Now, how do you kind of personally deal with, it seems like so much bureaucracy, and that you have to do these reports to, you know, attest for other reports, and everything is checking. How much is the actual work that you're
doing?
Yeah,
when do you get to practice your craft?
Well, most of the process that we go through is when we go through and look at the controls, is we say, hey, we have to put these systems in place, whether it's technology, software, or whether it's people, or whether it's defining the process. So when we see those things many times, and that was one of the things UHY said, actually, we did a great job our first time through, because all these things, many of them, we already had in place. So it's good business practice. But what you need to do is you need to kind of shine the light on where you're not doing so well and be willing to admit it, and then put some elbow grease behind putting things in place to make sure you're doing it the right way.
So putting systems in place, that's your superpower?
Yeah, I'm an IT guy, so that's what I do.
But you're not a large company in terms of manpower. You don't have like this huge staff and this large sales and marketing operation, right? You're a pretty lean outfit.
I think we're lean and mean, yeah.
I mean, compared to the size of the companies that you're serving.
Right, yeah, we service many billion-dollar companies, and we're just, 90, 100 million.
And what's some of your frustrations?
I try not to get frustrated. mostly it's that you can't always do everything that you want. You know, there are limitations. There's, you know, you have to have enough revenue to be able to provide the funds to be able to do it. And a lot of times it's a catch-22. We want to get into certain markets. We want to be able to have provide services, but we can't afford to, like FedRAMP. We there's no way that we could afford doing FedRAMP. But we can put certain practices in place that gets us a little closer to being in that position.
Now, do you manage people in your organization? Is that part of the scope of your responsibility?
Yeah. I handle the software development of the company, reports into me, IT support, and then network administration. So anything IT.
The reason I'm asking is, if you are small, if you are lean, and the stakes are so high, I would think you have to be very careful about who you bring on, and you have to be very good at the ongoing development of these folks. So any insight you might have to share with us, just in terms of crafting a culture, leading people, I know it would be helpful for me to hear, but I think for our listeners as well, because you've probably done some things really well, and I don't know, maybe tripped a couple times.
Yeah, definitely. I think you learn more from failing than you do from being successful. However, you're not ingratiated for failing. So, you know, we all try to be successful. Really, hiring well is very important. Is the people have to have, the guys always kid me. They're like, yeah, get her done. Yeah, we know, Dan, get her done. But it's one of those things where you have to define where you want to go. You have to put together a plan, and then you have to communicate what is it that you want to have happen. And then you execute, and then you communicate what you executed. So there's definitely you can't just do it shotgun. You have to really think through where you want to go. And that's kind of the yin and yang between the CEO and myself. And that's why I think we make a good team, is because Hal is very entrepreneurial. So he just wants to jump in both feet. And I'm like, okay, time out. We don't have anything in place to be able to manage that business as far as the controls. And he's like, yeah, but I want to do it tomorrow.
And he says,
like,
get her done.
Dude. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Becomes your problem then. So now, how is the Atlanta market for you? This is your base of operations.
Yeah.
So and how has it been?
Really good. Atlanta was really the core of starting the business, and now we're a national firm. And our CEO has visions of going international. So
what do you see as some of the pros and cons of the Atlanta technology kind of ecosystem?
Well,
you have good talent here. You're able to find talent. Are you able to find customers?
Atlanta definitely can find customers. Atlanta has good talent, but it is definitely consumed by all of the tech companies that are here. So it's when you have somebody who's available and you're trying to hire, you can't wait. I mean, you have to act immediately and evaluate. Hey, this is a good guy. Give him an offer. Don't. It's not like the traditional. Well, we'll bring them in for a second, a third interview. No, you have to really pounce on them.
And so you work with the universities to get the new hires?
No,
more
veteran, more tenured people who really understand their area and have areas of expertise. We do have some where we get newbies in and have to train them. But they have to definitely have a high aptitude for learning and picking up, and you can figure that out in the first couple of weeks.
So, is this for you a good example of a client relationship that you want more of?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's interesting because the first year, I don't think Dan was completely convinced of the value of this whole SOX.
So you were a skeptic?
I hate audits.
But you knew you had a need, but right. You weren't sure that this was the right way to deal with it.
No, it's more. I'm a doer, right? So I get something done. I want to move on to the next thing. Going back and having people evaluate and give you a report card really isn't something that I like doing. Is going back. Okay, now prove to me that you did this. I did it.
Isn't it done? So then,
yeah. But again, you know, it's been 3 years now, and we got over that initial hump and the initial skepticism, and it's been challenging. I mean, we try to deal with customers at all levels,
sure.
And we recognize that IST was a smaller company, and that this was a significant line item for them to pay for the production of this report. So, you know, we've worked with them over all that time, and Dan's gotten to the point now where he calls us up and says, hey, you know, I got this weird request from one of these RFPs, and how do I handle this? And so, you know, it's that trusted advisor relationship that we absolutely want to be.
And does this make your life easier, or like, is this there's a financial ROI that you guys are high-fiving about?
Well, I definitely would say if you don't have, especially in a small business, revenue associated with an activity, you don't do it. Mm-hmm. So if it weren't the value add that UHY and this process brought to bear, we wouldn't be doing it.
So do you have any advice for people regarding the process on how to make their lives easier?
I would say the biggest thing is find somebody you can trust. It's like finding a good mechanic, you know. You find somebody that you can trust that you is not trying to gouge you or take advantage of you. That's number one. You need to understand your market. What are the expectations of your customers? Investigating, understanding, and a lot of that can be just, I know it sounds boring, but reading over the RFIs and the RFPs and getting plugged into marketing a little bit of understanding that. Focus on improving security. Focus on those types of programs, because if you get security, you're going to end up with compliance. If you're trying to be compliant, as things change, you're going to be, you know, the tail on the dog. You just be all over the place. And you need to be honest with yourself. You need to admit in areas that you are not doing well and be willing to champion those things in your organization to get to make change and to be a change maker. And I think that the hardest part for me is, and my wife will tell you this, is I am not a big change guy. I am a routine guy, you know. I do the same thing the same way every morning.
But these things,
you know,
change all the time.
They change all the time. And so you have to...
So you're like in therapy?
Yeah. Well, you have to come to a place where you accept the fact that change for a purpose is good.
David's his therapist.
So you just say that to yourself every morning? Change is good?
Yeah, change is good. Change is good. Look in the mirror. Change is good.
He's got that posted on his mirror. Like.
So now... what type of companies hire IST?
It's any from the corporate realm to legal, hospitals. It's across all verticals. It's more a service that meets anybody's need.
And then what is the pain they're having where they go, you know, we got to bring those IST folks in?
Usually they'll have things where they just don't have good process set up.
But how do they know what's a symptom of not having good process? Like what's slipping through the cracks?
They can't get, like a simple example, they can't get mail delivered.
Mail delivered.
Right. They can't get mail. Large organizations, they can't get mail to the end user because their turnover is so great.
Right.
Because they don't know where the mail is or the packages because they get lost.
So it's just like in the basement.
Right.
Is that true? You'll go sometimes and there'll be a basement.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We had one that they had something crazy like over a million pieces of mail.
A million
pieces of mail, and we had to go in and sort through it.
And it was like Newman was running the mail.
Yeah, exactly.
So now I bet you have a lot of funny stories about that. So as facilities, that's usually the point of entry, and then, or that's just an example.
That's just an example. We have a sales force that's dedicated for facilities management. We have a sales force that's dedicated towards e-discovery. They're kind of two different animals. The commonality is that you're dealing with documents on both sides.
So that's the same. So an e-discovery, like in a law firm, they would have some issues, can't find documents, or and that's where your solution comes in?
Right. With law firms, we're just putting out a product called RIM, which is for records management. Mm-hmm. And that that's two-sided coin, right? There's electronic stuff and then there's paper stuff. And so we've designed a system that does both of those things in a single system.
Now, do you typically design things like this kind of based on you see, oh, there's probably a need and you create it and then you go in and sell it in?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, and we do use our existing install base. We'll even work with our customers, and that will help us develop the software, and they'll be a beta site for us.
Mm-hmm. Is that part some of the fun part for you?
Yeah, yeah. I've got a guy who handles all the software development. I got a guy.
Guy that gets it done.
Yeah, and he does a excellent job of doing that for our software development.
And then if somebody wanted to reach out and have a meaningful conversation with you regarding your company, is there a website?
Yeah, it's just www.istmanagement.com.
All right. David, what's the best way for folks to reach out and visit with somebody on the UHY Advisors team?
The UHY Advisors team can also be found on the interwebs at uhyus.com.
All right. Well, Dan, this has been a real pleasure. Very informative. I've learned a lot of new words. but no, this is, and I think this is important for people to learn about and understand. And I know our listeners will appreciate the wisdom as well. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thanks for inviting me.
And David, thank you, man. You're batting 1,000 every time you show up here with a guest. You say, "Look, this person is going to be fantastic. They're knowledgeable, and we don't send out documents. We don't make him prove it, but you flat proved it."
Yeah,
man.
We're going to have somebody doing it. What is it?
We're going to have that station.
Yeah.
We're going to come up with our own acronym. I got some thoughts about this, but thank you for continuing to hang out and play with us.
We like our customers.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our fearless producer, Ryan Redhawk McPherson, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next time on Cause and Effect Radio.